Hi, I'm Arlen Walker, and I am live from Pelham's Wasteland, and today I've got another episode of the podcast for you guys. I've got a couple of call-ins from the previous couple of episodes, and so I'm going to play those, and then I'm going to talk, I think, a little bit about a campaign that I have begun to work on. So let's get into that.
Hey Arlen, I just wanted to call and say, yeah, I'm very much interested in playing some One Ring Second Edition when it comes out. I got involved with Kickstarter, so yeah, it'd be great. I'd also be quite interested in your Cthulhu Dark Ages game. Really getting my head around Cthulhu a little bit as well at the moment. Strange enough, I think it's the 1981 box set that's being Kickstarted right now. Anyway, but yeah, man, I feel like we should have a chat about that, and I can't help but think we should find an excuse to get you to come on my show too and have a chat. I'm sure we have plenty of things we could talk about. Anyway, I'll leave that one hanging out there for you. See what you think, man. Speak to you soon. Hope you're well. Game on.
Yeah, so obviously, Che, you are welcome in... So that was Che Webster of Roleplay Rescue, and obviously, Che, you are welcome in... any of my games, One Ring or Cthulhu Dark Ages or this new thing that we are talking about doing, listeners will have to wait a little later in the show for that. And yeah, being on your show, that sounds like a lot of fun. I'm sure we could figure out something worth talking about that would be interesting for the listeners. But yeah, it's good stuff. Glad you're listening in. Glad you called in. And we're going to have more from Che. But first, we're going to go to Jason Connerly of the Nerds RPG Variety Cast and listen to some of his thoughts on the Bone Crunch episode.
Hey, Arlen, Jason here. As far as Bone Crunch goes on your latest episode, I tend to agree with you. I don't think hit points do a good job. They are very gamist. I do think Rolemaster does a decent job at it if you're actually playing Rolemaster. The other game that does a good job is RuneQuest, or at least the older editions of RuneQuest did a good job. You know, often you'd end up losing limbs and having damage done. But Rolemaster, especially with the critical hit tables and the bleeding and the concussions and different things, does a pretty good job. Obviously, Riddle Steel does a good job at this too. I think if you're going to adapt it to a lighter system, you find a critical hits charts that you like, and just every hit's a critical hit, you know, and you just do some adaptation and improvisation. You don't like that. So instead of improvising ahead of time, you just adjust the Rolemaster charts, whatever charts, you know, to the system of your choice. And then something like Savage Worlds, where you only have 3 wounds or whatever. And then you do that, and then you also have the crit. So every hit, not only are you taking a wound, but, you know, you're rolling that critical hit table. And or for mooks, there, you know, you're rolling that critical hit table. And so I think pretty quickly it would turn out to be pretty bloody. But and that's the easiest way, probably do it on a lighter system. But I agree with you, Bone Crunch is definitely more satisfying than D&D style hit points.
So, Jason Connerly of the Nerds RPG Variety Cast calling in there to talk about Bone Crunch. Yeah, I think it's something that a lot of people probably feel like. I think it seems like a lot of the experience I see with regard to hit points is hit points are kind of silly when you think really hard about them. But that in play, they're okay. They're not necessarily great or horrible. They're just kind of the way things work. And in some ways that it ties into this idea that they're so ubiquitous in gaming that they're just accepted, that that hit points are just how you measure a character's health. So anyway, I have not, well, I guess now I'll have to get you to run Rolemaster at some point for me, Jason. We'll, you know, make sure we have the charts in front of us so that it doesn't slow down too much and try it out and all that sort of stuff and see how bone crunchy it gets. Yeah, RuneQuest is definitely I only really have any familiarity with the newest versions, but Mithras, I think, one of the clever things Mithras does, of course, is that it adds all these special effects that you can choose from that are based on essentially getting a better role, which means that those special effects actually get used. Which is, I think, the big thing is that, like, in a lot of games, you know, it's a, well, I could trip the character for, I could trip the bad guy for about the same odds as hitting them, or I could just hit them and take away some of their hit points. Seems like that's often the way it works out, is that unless your character, especially if you're talking about post 3.5, era gaming, a lot of times you end up with situations where, unless you're in sort of like a specifically crafted encounter or your character specifically crafted to do something like that, there isn't a lot of reason to not just try to whittle down hit points, especially if you're sort of a striker character. But anyway, I digress. Yeah, so Bone Crunch. I like the idea of using a table or something, maybe even a even just like a hit location table or a sort of sword stroke style table. That might be interesting, rather than taking it from the direction of hit location, take it more from the direction of like the actual like hit location is very focused on the target. What if you had a table that was focused on the actions of the character? So it was more like, you know, you start in, you know, you strike downwards from above type thing, versus you strike, you know, a rising strike versus, you know, across the body versus, I don't know how you would do it necessarily, but maybe you could even, you could use the attack zones for something like Blade of the Iron Throne or the Riddle of Steel or something, and just roll like a d12 to say, like, you know, because I think there are 12 attack zones for melee combat in Blade of the Iron Throne. So maybe you could do that. You could just, you know, roll a d12, or if you were in roll 20, you could set up a rollable table that just, you know, tells you which zone you attacked, and maybe even you could have it be a macro, so you could have multiple integrated tables, so it could be like which zone you attacked and how or something. I don't know. I'm sure there's something you could do that would make it feel. I think really what I'm going for is that kind of visceral feeling. And also, I feel like rounds of combat often, you know, there's a way in which the round delineation splits up the action artificially, right? If we're imagining what the kind of furious melee looks like versus the rounds. One of the things in the Blade of the Iron Throne book, they have a great kind of sequence that is a sample combat, essentially. And then at the end, they have a bit of like written fiction that is sort of what happened in that combat. And it's like 2 pages of, or more, maybe like 4 pages. I can't remember exactly, but it's a fairly significant chunk, and then down to a couple paragraphs of what actually happened in that combat. And that recap, I think, is really cool because it gives that real sense. It feels much more like a piece of like sword and sorcery fiction or something. So anyway, yeah, I like the idea of having a table, having like a crit table for, you know, how do you take down the bad guys type thing. I'm not sure where you're getting the idea that I don't like improvising. I'm, you know, you've played in my games, Jason. It's clear that I don't have that much planned out. There's a lot of improvising that goes on certainly in the games that I run. So, but anyway, who knows what that's about. So yeah. Bone Crunch. I think it's something cool. I think it definitely is a, you know, there's a real visceral quality when it is well done that makes you kind of connect to the physicality of the world and the characters and, you know, the idea of the reality of the steel that's in their hand and all that sort of stuff becomes something important. So I think that's kind of what I have to say about that.
As far as the second part where you talk about how you don't feel that less mechanics create more player choice, or at least you don't feel that having less mechanics and the GM making rulings is fair, I have an answer for that.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes.
So, honestly, what you've done is you've hit right on the whole rules over rulings point of OSR games. And I think the core of their argument is rulings over rules. And the core of your side is rules over rulings. But I don't know that there's an absolute right answer. I think it depends on the group. I think there are a lot of groups that are very comfortable with the GM saying, yeah, you're close quarters in the elevator, you can roll D8 for the knife because you're going to, you know, gank them a bunch of times. You know, and at the same time, the character with a spear in the elevator is going to roll D4 because they can't effectively maneuver. So, and there are a lot of groups that are very comfortable with the GM making those on-the-spot decisions. Other groups who have trust issues aren't okay with that. And in their case, you know, a game like, you know, 3.5, Pathfinder, 5e, you know, something really, really broken down and mechanical would be more suitable for that group that has trust issues. So I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all issue. But, I think it's an interesting segment, and I'm curious to see if you get any other responses and what other people's thoughts are on it. But thank you for putting the show out. I always enjoy hearing your episodes, and I look forward to the next one. Take care.
So I'm going to start by saying I agree, Jason, that I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all issue. I think it's very much about what people are comfortable with. And then I'm going to talk about Star Wars because you played a sound clip from Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. And it happens to be a line that I quite like, specifically because I think it divides people who listen to it into people who were and weren't paying attention to the prequels as a whole. And by that I mean that I'm hardly the first person to say that when Obi-Wan says only a Sith deals in absolutes, that he is himself dealing in an absolute statement, right? Only a Sith is an absolute statement. And specifically, the point of that is that some people who get to that line and think about it and haven't been paying attention to what the prequels are about will say that, oh, George Lucas is a bad writer because he's had Obi-Wan contradict himself. And other people who have been paying attention to what the prequels are actually about, basically, will get to that line and say, "Ha, this is sort of the culmination of all of this stuff that we've been dealing with, the way in which this, you know, the moral certainty of the original trilogy has given way to a gray and indecipherable moral quagmire." It's specifically the way that Anakin and Obi-Wan are basically two characters who are faced with a similar situation and have responded very differently, in that Obi-Wan still believes in a difference between the Jedi and the Sith, and Anakin doesn't, right? Star Wars Episode 3 is basically about Anakin's fall to darkness, Anakin being seduced by the dark side and all that, as Obi-Wan puts it in A New Hope, is Anakin deciding that there is not a difference between the Jedi and the Sith, right? Anakin has Count Dooku at lightsaber point ready to kill him, and he says, "I shouldn't kill him, it's not the Jedi way." And Palpatine says, "Do it," and Anakin kills him, and people laugh about that. But also, when Mace Windu has Palpatine at lightsaber point, and Anakin says it's not the Jedi way to kill him, and Mace Windu says he's too dangerous to be left alive. That's when Anakin breaks, right? It's really very straightforward if you're paying attention to what the prequels are actually about, that George Lucas knows what he's doing. He's not a fantastic writer, I don't think. I don't think he's the best writer, but he understands, like, how to tell a story that has thematic depth, right? That I think it's hard to deny. Anyway, and I'm getting into that partly because I just like talking about Star Wars and how the prequels, I think, are much maligned. And there's plenty of real things to be annoyed about with the prequels, like the way that the CGI looks like just trash sometimes and all of that sort of stuff. And you don't need to, you know, pretend that the actual good stuff is trash too. Anyway, but the point that I'm getting at has to do with the way that perspective becomes central to experience, and at the same time, the way that if somebody had just, well, basically, if the Jedi had had more clear rules, they would be more different than the Sith. Or rather, to go back to RPGs, that's probably the wrong way to put it, and I'm not entirely sure what that means. But to go back to RPGs, I think what I'm getting at is not about trust or lack of trust. I don't think it's about fairness. I think it's about health. I think it's about the health of a game and an experience, that in the same way that having an X card in play, even if it never gets tapped, is a sign of a healthy game, right? The idea that having that outlet is something, everybody being on board with that outlet is something that I think is central to having a healthy horror experience in an RPG. That having rules that are a neutral ground to which both the players and the GM have agreed, and that become a central framework for the collaborative experience, I think is something important for a healthy game. And I don't think it's really rulings over rules in some ways, or rules over rulings in some ways. I think there's nothing wrong with having a game where rulings are to be expected, as long as those rulings are consistent and they become part of, for lack of a better term, the sacred text, that the ruling becomes a part of the sacrosanct element of the game mechanics, essentially, that nobody is above. I guess what I'm getting at is this idea that nobody is above the game mechanics, because I think that is something deeply unhealthy. And I saw on Twitter one time, I saw a person saying, if I make a change to my game, it's because I know, or I think, that the players will have more fun this way, and you had better like it, and you can play in my game that way or not at all. It is true that players may prefer that change to the rules as an experience, that they may prefer the different rules. At the same time, that person is basically describing an abusive relationship, right? You'll like it, or you can stop engaging with it. And when I am above your kind of consideration of these rules, I guess what I'm getting at is that person, it would be totally different if that person was upfront about the changes and, you know, came to the players and said, hey, I think that we've been playing this way and that's not really the way we should play. but they're not taking that approach. They're taking the approach of, well, I'm the DM, so rule zero, essentially rule zero is more than rule one. And my response to that is that I think rule zero is actually in some ways unhealthy, that the GM is always right is not the way that we should approach these games if we want to have an experience that is predicated upon shared imagination, and specifically the value of shared imagination, that there is too much essentially that rule zero or invoking rule zero is kind of unhealthy. It's not the basis for a healthy experience at the gaming table, I don't think. At least in certain forms of it. To go back to your example of switching the damage for a dagger versus a spear, like in a closed elevator or something, I think that is fine as long as that becomes part of the way that the game is played going forward. The problem is when that happens in one situation but not the other, because the GM or the DM is deciding upon things like that sort of willy-nilly, right? That they've decided, oh, well, in this one situation, we'll do this thing, and in this other situation that is basically the same, we'll do this other thing. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a better way to put it, but I do think that it has to do, I don't think it's about fairness. I don't think it's about I think more than being about fairness, more than being about trust or anything like that, it's really about health. The healthy relationship between adults who want to invoke the shared experience of RPGs, I think, is dependent upon an agreement about the value of the rules. And that it's not to say that every situation where that agreement isn't a part of the table play is unhealthy, but it's certainly the possibility exists when that agreement isn't there, if that makes sense. In the same way that just because an X card isn't on the table doesn't mean that everybody is going to have a bad time, but a game with an X card on the table, it has an outlet, a security that I think it's the same way with an agreement about the sanctity of the rules. I don't know. I'm going to think more about it. I'm trying to figure out a better way to put it, because I don't think it's rulings over rules. I think it actually allows for rulings over rules regularly when those rulings don't contradict the rules. That's the big thing, is that if you a ruling that contradicts the pre-existing rules is a serious problem, but rulings that fill out the rules experience at the table are totally okay. So I don't know. I'm gonna think more about it and get back to you guys about it.
Hey, Arlen, Jay, just wanted to thank you for your episode, Bone Crunch. Both elements of that were great to listen to. And Bone Crunch, yes, that spoke to me. That's a word I'm nicking. I love that phrase. Arlen Walker's Bone Crunch, which, by the way, is the name of your game. That's what it should be if you ever publish one. GURPS. You mentioned GURPS as a game that does this quite well. It's one of the reasons I like the game so much, is I get that sense of you know, the blows mattering and kind of landing. There's a range of different levels of kind of realism, if you want to use that word, you can use in GURPS. The more you use, the more you get that sense of it. But obviously, the more the game is crunched
in terms of the mechanisms themselves. So I like the sort of the middle ground of that. I think it works really, really well. It's one of the reasons why I think I like the game so much, because combat is so visceral. I'd really be interested in learning to play Riddle of Steel to find out how that goes. My feeling is that there's a point at which the game becomes so crunchy that it sort of is just combat. Every session ends up being combat. And I kind of want to avoid that because I want to role play around it. So I was really interested in what you had to say about that balance of narrative. But I can't help but feel, when you said, like, can you do this with lighter systems, like, more narratively, I feel like part of Bone Crunch is this balance between the narrative sense of crunch, like you talked about, you know, blood bone, and mechanical crunch, that actually the sense of it matters, that things happen, like dice get rolled and stuff goes on the character sheet and that kind of stuff. It's just really important. There's a balance of that required, and I feel like one of the reasons I don't like light rule games is because they just lack that. Which brings me on to thoughts about the second thing you talked about, the idea of, like, you know, if every weapon has 1d6 damage, then you have an infinite choice of weapon, but so what? Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was my response when I read, like, OD&D, everything does 1d6. And I was like, what? My two-handed sword and my dagger both do 1d6. And I'm with you on the sense of, well, first of all, that just challenges my sense of, like, believability. But the second thing is, like, so what? It doesn't matter. I mean, I can use a broken bottle and it's just as effective as a two-handed sword, or the most finely crafted blade in the realm is suddenly the same as picking up a stone and throwing it at someone. Really? It doesn't matter, does it? It has no meaning. And I thought that was really well articulated by you. And for me, yeah, it's the reason why, again, this whole kind of freedom that comes from no rules, for me, is a false freedom. But, yeah, no, just sticking my neck out with that one. When it comes to the idea of imbalance with power of the GM, yeah, I think so. I think that rules provide the level playing field. I loved it all, man. Thanks so much for that. Game on.
Yeah, so thanks, Che, calling in. Yeah, GURPS, I have a bunch of books for GURPS, but I've only played it once and would like to get into it at some point, but I don't know. I need to figure out how to make that happen, I guess. Get into one of your games or one of the games organized on your Discord or something. Yeah, Bone Crunch. I agree. I think there is something about it being systematized, that the experience has to do with the sort of pairing of there's a way in which the impact of the rigidity of the structure impacting upon the fluidity of the narrative mirrors the idea of the rigidity of a weapon impacting on the fluidity of flesh, basically, to get really freaky about it. Something about that is, I think, central to the experience of Bone Crunch as I see it. So yeah, I don't know. Riddle of Steel, though, I'm going to talk about that on the next segment. So thanks, Che, for calling in, and thanks, Jason, for calling in. And anybody else who wants to talk about these concepts, I think, you know, I'm always up for talking about violence and RPGs and all that sort of stuff, so we can get into it. But yeah, I'm going to talk now about a game that I'm going to run. So I promised that I was going to talk about a game. So if you have not been listening to Che Webster's Roleplay Rescue, he on that podcast has been talking about, and then on Discord, he and I have been talking about specifically some of the things that he is really interested in getting from his game, some of the experiences that we want to have be a part of the game and all that sort of stuff, and the way to structure the experience and all that sort of stuff. And one of the things that we've been talking about is this idea of setting exploration, and particularly deep setting exploration, the idea that there's, you know, a lot to uncover and explore and find out about and all of this sort of stuff to learn based on engagement with the setting of the RPG. And so we had sort of been talking about that, and I had sort of thrown out a couple of ideas. And then a couple days ago, I decided, you know what, let's just do it. Let's go for it. And so I put out the call on his Discord. And if you're interested in this idea, it'll probably be a game during the day U.S. time, because it'll be in the evening or afternoon for Che. But if you are interested and available, you should let me know, and we should be able to figure out a time to play. Based on those recent calls, I had a couple of ideas for the game. One of them was to do a sort of low fantasy, medieval fantasy with Burning Wheel. One of them was to do a sort of Dark Ages Call of Cthulhu thing, and one of them was to do a sort of Riddle of Steel-based thing. And then with Che's discussion there, I sort of thought, well, why not? Why not do something with Blade of the Iron Throne, which, as you guys may remember, is one of the Riddle of Steel-likes. It's a game based on the Riddle of Steel mechanically, so pretty cool stuff. It's a really fun game, and it's got a great combat system and a lot of bone crunch to it, so seems like it would be a lot of fun for that. Really, you know, we'd get a lot of tactical play, and then also we'd be able to, you know, we could pair that with a really interesting setting and have a lot of kind of setting detail and flavor and kind of visceral experience be a part of the game. And I think that's what we're going to do. So right now the idea is to use a further altered version of my Barbarians of the Iron Throne hack. What I've done is I've gone in and re-added a skill system, and I can find the Roll20 sheet to tell you about all the skills. So let me open up the Roll20 game, and I will tell you about the different skills. Because what I did originally, Barbarians of the Iron Throne used the Barbarians of Lemuria-style career system. And I liked that a fair bit, but I feel like this will be a little more concrete. Having an actual skill list will just mean that we're a little bit, a little bit more concrete. So anyway, the skill list is as follows. So first we have acrobatics, and then animal handling, arcana, athletics, awareness, command, customs, which is the only sort of special skill that I've got, deception, decipher, detect sorcery, endurance, healing, history, insight, intimidation, investigation, legends, navigation, negotiation, occultism. Oh, negotiation shouldn't be on there. Occultism, performance, persuade, sleight of hand, stealth, and survival. It's fairly heavily based on the D&D 5th edition skill list with some additions, as you will notice. Basically, the idea is that this is designed to be a skill list to cover the sort of stuff that sword and sorcery heroes need to do. And I like the idea that there's a lot of different things that are suggested by the skill list. I think that's one of the things that I am really interested in, is the idea of, you know, suggesting the role of the characters through the skill list and things like that. So, for instance, the idea of there's no religion skill. There's a legends skill and an occultism skill, but there's no kind of religion skill. I think that's cool. So you would use legends or occultism, probably legends for things like, you know, the sort of dominant pantheon, and occultism for, you know, other stuff and all that weirdness. And then you have, anyway, so I like this idea. So that means that there are, computer's having trouble. Hope that the recording is okay. Okay, looks like things are back. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24 skills, which is cool, because priority A on skills gives you 48 skill points, and priority C gives you 24, which means that hypothetically you could buy priority A and put 2 points into every skill. Now, you probably wouldn't do that because that's not a very efficient spending of your skill points, but you could do that if you wanted to. Anyway, so the idea is that this is a skill list. Barbarians of the Iron Throne, one of the other things that I did was I changed the way that proficiencies work, so that instead of having a different proficiency for every kind of style of melee weapon, you just have melee proficiency, ranged proficiency, defensive proficiency, and your spells. And then there's some other stuff that I changed. I brought back some stuff from the Riddle of Steel, like the way that initiative actually works sort of based on a combination of the Riddle of Steel and Shadow of the Demon Lord, where there's fast turns and slow turns. Fast turns you move or attack, slow turns you move and attack, or rather move or take an action, and slow turns you move and take an action. I think it's going to be pretty cool. It's got a real, there's something exciting about this process, I think. And I've got a bunch of different pieces sort of lined up, different elements in motion that I'm working on to try to kind of harness the whole thing together. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to make for a really fun game. The idea is to set it in this sort of island in this kind of Bronze Age or Iron Age setting that has somehow just been discovered. And there's, you know, temples and tombs and all sorts of ruins of lost civilizations on this island. And so the heroes are going to be treasure hunters, basically, who are going out into the wilderness to figure out what's going on and all that sort of stuff. And so there's going to be, I think there might be an actual sort of meta plot, that there's sort of history and legends and lore to learn, but that there's also treasure to be found. And so the heroes may just decide to go after treasure and all that sort of stuff. So anyway, yeah. I think, what else is there to say about this game? I'm not sure what the name of the island is yet. And what I want to do is, once I get home, I'm going to use Hexkit to make a map of the island, or maybe two maps for the whole island. But basically to create a full map, a hex map, and we'll do overland travel and go on adventures and all of that sort of stuff. So it'll be good. I don't know. I'm not sure what else there is to say about it, but it's pretty cool stuff. It's pretty cool stuff. I'm really excited about this project. There's some sort of rules tinkering that I've been doing with the rules for the Barbarians, the Iron Throne hack, which is now called Bone Crunch, thanks to Che Webster. Because obviously that's apparently the name that my game needs to have. So that's what it's called. But yeah, I think it's going to be really fun. I think it's going to make for a really good kind of sword and sorcery exploration game that has the sort of flavor that we're going for and all that sort of stuff. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. All right, that is that. So yeah, I think that's going to be everything for this episode. So big thanks to the callers, Jason and Che. It's great to hear from both of you guys. Both of them are good friends and friends of the podcast who call in pretty regularly and give me lots of things to talk about. I am planning, so I had been planning on doing a solo play episode, and I think I'm going to, but I think I'm going to change the game that I'm doing it with. I think I'm actually going to do the solo play episode with the Bone Crunch hack to try to show it off, and do a little bit of kind of solo play testing before we get to the main event. So, you know, that's pretty cool. But yeah, I think I'm going to do that. That'll probably be the next episode, and then we'll get back into sort of discussion episodes. So I hope you guys have enjoyed. I've been Arlen Walker. I've been live from Pelham's Wasteland, and I will see you next time. Take care, everybody.